In Ukraine, the snow is falling, as are temperatures, as the war enters its winter season. Inside Russia, there are reports of attacks on two air bases far from the border. It raises questions about who is behind the attacks and what Ukrainian military capabilities might be. Jeffrey Edmonds is on the line to assess the state of the war. He's a research scientist who focuses on the Russian military at CNA, a research and analysis group. Jeffrey, welcome back.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Can I start by asking you about the explosions at the two bases inside Russia? They're home to the Russian long-range bombers that have been attacking Ukrainian cities. Ukraine has not claimed responsibility, perhaps not yet. How strategic are these air bases?
I think they are strategic. I mean, both bases house these long-range bombers that are part of Russia's nuclear force, but also have been used to launch cruise missiles into Ukraine. In that regard, they're legitimate military targets. But it's not as if Russia has just an infinite number of these types of long-range aircraft. And this really, in a certain sense, shocks the psyche a bit, in the sense that these are deep inside Russia, at least 600 kilometers from the border. And so if they can attack those targets, if it is indeed Ukraine, then what else could they possibly attack?
Right. I mean, what would it tell us if it's indeed Ukraine? What would it tell us about Ukraine's long-range capabilities?
So I think that, you know, there's no weapon that we're aware of that Ukraine could fire from Ukraine to hit these targets. And so what it might be is a small team of operators. I mean, I don't know this, but it could be a small team of operators with, say, a drone. They get close to the base, launch the drone into the base, and then target aircraft there.
Okay. Now, there are also reports today of Russian attacks on Ukraine, perhaps retaliation, which brings us to the question of Ukrainian defenses against Russian missiles. They do have a technology called the National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems. How important is this technology, and where's it coming from?
I think it's very important, and these have been supplied by a number of our allies. Russia's really stepped up, as you know, their attacks against critical infrastructure in Ukraine in an attempt to undermine Ukrainian will to stay in this fight. And it's one of the more thought-through, deliberate operations that Russia's actually conducted in this war. And so it's incredibly important for the Ukrainians to have some ability to mitigate these attacks against critical infrastructure, especially as winter's coming.
And has it been working well so far? Do we know?
Partially. I mean, but I think that, you know, there are so many missiles that have been launched, in a certain sense, overwhelm the ability of the Ukrainians to defend against these. The Ukrainians have had some success in targeting cruise missiles that are coming into Ukraine, but not enough. And so they could certainly use more of these systems.
Stepping back a little bit, how well or not well do you think the Ukrainian military has incorporated imported technology?
I think they've done very well. I mean, you know, the archetype here is the HIMARS that we've given them. They've used those to great effect. But regardless of whether it's the HIMARS, the long-range artillery system, or these, you know, air defense systems, the Ukrainian military has shown great flexibility and speed in its ability to incorporate these into its larger military plans.
Okay. Now, over the weekend, the head of U.S. intelligence, Avril Haines, said Vladimir Putin in Moscow is getting a clearer picture of the challenges in Ukraine. In other words, less of a rosy picture, no longer people just telling him what he wants to hear. If he's getting a more reality-based sense of what's going on, would that change how Russia prosecutes this war?
I don't think it does. I don't think it changes either his goals or the tenacity with which he pursues them. I think what you might see is more changes in military leadership. You might see changes in military operations. I agree with her. I certainly think he's getting a clearer picture on the ground, because you can only hide the fact that you are losing in Ukraine so much before he actually is able to understand what the situation is.
Avril Haines over the weekend also said the Russian tempo of the war may be slowing down. But on the other hand, I've read that some military analysts suggest winter is a good time to step up mechanized warfare. So as far as the winter, could it go either way?
So I think we can kind of lull ourselves into thinking that with winter coming, military operations stop. Winter makes war hard, but it doesn't make war stop. For me, winter is critical, in the sense that, are the Ukrainians going to be able to keep up their momentum and attack Russian defenses? Are Russians able to defend the territory they have? Are they able to integrate new troops? You'll definitely see a slowing down of operations during the winter, but I definitely don't think we're going to see military operations stop.
And just remind us, how does winter make it more challenging to kind of keep it going?
I mean, at the individual level, it's just harder to get up in the morning and do things in the winter. Like if you're a soldier, it's just harder to get things done. It's harder to work on equipment. Your hands hurt. You're cold. You have to take time to warm up. And it just wears you down over time. And you could see lapses in, you know, maintaining military equipment. And it's just harder to coordinate. The ground becomes harder to move on. And so it, just in general, from the individual level up to, you know, large units, winter just makes things more difficult.
Okay. Doesn't winter provide either side, in your view, an advantage?
I don't think it provides either side an advantage. In so much as it slows down Ukrainian operations, it does give the Russians perhaps some time to try to regroup and fill the void, you know, some of the voids in their own military with these new recruits. Now, whether or not these new recruits are getting trained, especially in the winter, is difficult to say. So I don't know that it gives each side an advantage. I do think any slowing in operations gives the Russians an advantage.
The winter could also offer each side an opportunity to regroup. Does one side or the other need the regrouping, I guess, more?
I think the Russians do. I mean, the Russians are still recovering or trying to recover from the initial failures of the war. I mean, they've lost a tremendous number of people. They've lost many of their officers, a lot of equipment. And so the Russians really do want to bide for time to, you know, get these soldiers that they've mobilized into their units, get more equipment to the line, build up their defenses. And so time, in a certain sense, does play towards a Russian advantage.
I want to ask you about Russian attacks on essential infrastructure in Ukraine, including, of course, pieces of the power grid providing electricity and heating to regular people in Ukraine. The EU and Ukraine have called these attacks terrorism. The U.S. has not gone that far. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has called it a barbaric act. Does this wordsmithing matter?
I think it does. I mean, technically, the U.S. has, you know, we have certain definitions for things like state-sponsored terrorism or terrorism in general. While I certainly think it's barbaric, this is actually one of the few things Russia has done that we could have predicted before the war. The Russians have this concept of attacking critical infrastructure to undermine the will of an adversary to continue in war. And so this does not surprise me, but I do think it's barbaric.
Okay. Just before we let you go in a moment, what else should we know about the state of the fighting now? What else should we know about how to think about where this goes next?
So I think for me anyway, the real critical part is going to be how both sides sustain themselves and conduct operations in winter. We can get trapped in this idea that, you know, the way the war looks now is the way the war is going to look 3 months from now. And so you have to keep questioning your assumptions and revisiting the battlefield to see where the changes are. There aren't a lot of changes along the boundaries right now, and that's been the case for some time. But we also saw a large Ukrainian counteroffensive. And so going into winter, we shouldn't lull ourselves into thinking that it's just going to be a quiet front, right? You could see Ukrainian offensives. I know the Russians, in their mind, are waiting for a counteroffensive. I mean, they're wanting to conduct a counteroffensive themselves at some point. Whether that's the winter, the spring, or the summer is unclear. But you could see this war drag out for years, where you have basically a line of contact that becomes very violent at times and then quiet at times as each side recovers.
Go on for years. Is that a high likelihood?
I don't know that it's high. Again, it's very difficult to say because so much of it, I think, depends on this winter. It's not clear the Russians have the logistical wherewithal to maintain their troops, and especially morale, which is already very low throughout the winter. And so I think come spring, we'll have a better idea of whether or not the Russians are able to stay in this fight, given the mobilization they just had. They'll probably have additional mobilizations. And if they're able to successfully do that, and the West continues to support Ukraine, then you could see this definitely carrying out for an extended period of time.
Jeffrey Edmonds researches the Russian military at the research and analysis group CNA. Jeffrey, thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.